Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
In the hands of Waiters, 3 seconds left for three in the win. Yes! Deion has done it!
I watched Marcus Morris handling the ball like he was a point guard.
Welcome to another episode of the RotoWire NBA podcast. Nick Whalen joined, as I always am, on Tuesday evenings by RotoWire's assistant NBA editor, Alex Barutha. Alex, you were just reading me the NBA headlines on ESPN.com as kind of a reiteration that this has been a very slow news day. It's kind of a smaller slate tonight, as is typical on Tuesdays. So not a lot of news to discuss. We hit on the NBA potentially trying to get an All-Star game organized for next month on last week's show. There haven't really been too many more developments there. No major injury news. No major COVID news at this point, although Karl Anthony Towns will miss another game on Wednesday night. So what better time than to unveil our quarter season All-Star teams? This is one of my favorite exercises that we do a few times usually throughout the year. If it were up to me, I would be happy to do this just like once a week and kind of switch guys out as the season goes on. But I did the math, and we're just over a quarter of the way through the season, assuming we do make it to 72 games. Most teams have played 18, 19, 20 games, depending on the COVID situation. So I think we have just enough of a sample size to actually throw some legitimate teams out there and not feel like 2 weeks from now our entire rosters could be different.
Yeah, that's true. The season's been, tough with trying to gauge like what teams are good and what guys would be deserving of an All-Star spot because of all the COVID absences and whatnot. Like some guys, they've played 8 games, so their efficiency is like, who knows if it's real or not. Some guys have been like Jaylen Brown have been making up for the absences of like Jason Tatum, so their volume's way higher. But this was kind of a hard, like difficult exercise to do. There's just a lot of players playing well right now, and it feels tough to leave some of them off the team.
So we didn't really set any hard guidelines for how we would do this. Obviously, we'll do 12 guys in the Eastern Conference, 12 in the West. And, if the NBA does end up having an All-Star game, I assume that it will be the draft format that we've had the last few years. So they'll ultimately end up being scrambled. But for our purposes, we'll keep 12 Eastern Conference players, 5 starters, 12 Western Conference players. Did you kind of set any personal guidelines for yourself in terms of like minimum games played or anything like that?
I think it was like 10 games for me. If they are going to play at least 10 games, I didn't include them. So like Jimmy Butler was someone who just isn't going to make the list for me because of that. Other than that, no. I mean, I guess I try to put them at the position that I feel like they play the most. So which was tough. Like, I'm not going to put LeBron in the guard spot in the West anymore. I'm not going to do that. They have Dennis Schroeder there. Those were like the only two parameters I really had.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Tatum is an interesting one that you brought up. I mean, he's played 13 games. It felt like he was out for longer. And part of that was he kind of benefited from the Celtics having games postponed that eventually they will hopefully make up, and the difference, won't be all that stark at the end of the year. I ran into that with John Morant in the Western Conference. As we'll talk about, I did not include him on my team. I think if we did this exercise a month from now, right before the All-Star break, and he plays in maybe every game from now until then and plays really well, I would have no problem with him making the team. But for me, these were the guys that if the cutoff for voting was today, these are the 12 guys in each conference who I would choose. And we should be clear that that's at least how I did it. I mean, this was not a prediction. This is the 12 guys that I would want on my All-Star team.
100%. Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Okay. Well, I will kick it to you, and let's go. Give me your five starters in the Eastern Conference.
Trae Young, Bradley Beal, Giannis, Kevin Durant, and Joel Embiid.
Okay. I have three of those five. I went Joel Embiid, Giannis, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Jaylen Brown as my fifth guard.
Yeah. So Brown was originally in there for me, and I think I flipped him. The guard spot was really tough for me. I was basically between Jaylen Brown, Trae Young, Bradley Beal, and Kyrie Irving as my four guards that I was considering as starters. And then Harden, yeah, I don't know. The whole, like, forcing his way out of a Houston thing kind of rubbed me the wrong way, so I didn't include him in the starting lineup. But he just as easily could. Like, he deserves to be there, I think, statistically.
Yeah, Trae Young's hair rubs me the wrong way, so that's why I decided to keep him out of the starting lineup. No, I thought about that as well, and I don't think the NBA, like, I remember when CC Sabathia was traded, I think this was the case that I'm thinking of, from Cleveland to Milwaukee in, like, 2008 or whatever that was. He didn't win the Cy Young because half of his stats counted for the AL and half counted for the NL, so he had, like, two halves of a great year, but altogether he couldn't win the AL or the NL Cy Young. I don't think that's how it works with Harden, where, like, he would only technically have, like, six games played with the Nets right now. Like, I think it's all on aggregate. And for me, obviously, I mean, we've talked about this on the pod. It rubbed me the wrong way as well. I think it'd be pretty hard, unless you're a diehard Brooklyn Nets fan, to not be rubbed the wrong way by how he handled that. At the same time, I didn't feel like Trae Young or Brad Beal's cases were that strong that, you know, it put him over the top. Like, to me, it was kind of, those guys were all on a similar-ish level, and I think Harden is by far the best player of the three, so I kind of defaulted to him. I mean, with Beal, how much do you weigh the Wizards being the worst team in the league right now versus Bradley Beal just torching teams night in and night out?
I think if you're scoring 35 points a game on good efficiency, it's hard for me to, like, really say that you shouldn't be an all-star. You know, I think there are other guys in the league who could do that, but there's a difference between saying someone could do it and actually going out and doing it. You know, 35 points a game on 26 shots. And I think, you know, I don't care that much that the team is awful. It's not his fault. So, yeah.
I'm with you on that. I have Beal on my bench. That was a no-brainer for sure. I know he got left off last year, you know, averaging pretty similar numbers, but he's leading the league in scoring this year. He's up, you know, right now compared to the end of last year, he's up almost 5 points per game on his 30.5 last season. So, like, I am with you where it's like, if he was averaging like 28 points per game and they were the worst team in the league, then it's like, well, this is basically Zach LaVine. But when you're doing it on very good efficiency, he's at 48% from the field, you know, almost 90% at the line, 34% from three, not committing a ton of turnovers. Like, he's even more efficient than he was last year. You know, when you reach a certain level statistically, even if you're on the worst team in the league, like, to me, it's like, okay, 35 points a game is kind of next level stuff, regardless of you know, the team could be 0-20. And if you're averaging 35 a game with that kind of efficiency, I don't really hold it against you personally.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Okay, wait, so you had Trae Young as your fifth starter in the East. And you said you considered Jaylen Brown. What ultimately made you choose the Young-Beal combo over Brown or any other guard that you may have considered there?
I think Trae Young's passing ability, like the 9 assists a game, really, I think, took it over the mark for me. Like, Jaylen Brown's a good ball handler, and he's an improved ball handler and passer and good defender. But Trae Young, I don't know, he's such a driving force of the Hawks offense in a way that Jaylen Brown isn't. And, you know, he's also doing it efficiently. Like, his field goal percentage isn't great. Like, you look at Trae Young's field goal percentage, you're like 42%. That's pretty bad. But he's getting to the line 11 times a game, 88% from there, shooting 36% from three. The efficiency ends up being pretty good. You could easily convince me of Jaylen Brown as well, but I think Trae Young has also had more big games this season, more games where he's had, like, you know, 35 points, 15 assists, stuff like that, to where Jaylen Brown is more steady, and I probably shouldn't knock him for that, but it was a really tough choice.
Yeah, they're such different players that it's kind of hard to compare apples to apples. But I don't know. I defaulted to some of the metrics. Like Jaylen Brown is ahead in VORP. He's ahead in PER by a couple points. He's ahead in BPM. Obviously, a vastly superior defender, and that's something that played into it for me. And then not having Jason Tatum, you know, for part of this campaign as well, and the way that Jaylen Brown has kind of been able to carry that offense through the first quarter of the season. But yeah, he to me is like he's the fifth starter of that group. Like Embiid, Giannis, Durant for me were no brainer locks. So was that the case for you as well?
Yeah. I'm with you on that. That was like, I mean, those guys are MVP candidates. So right. I don't know what you would do with them otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so sticking with the East, I don't know if you have your bench ordered at all, but give me the guy who is your first man out, like, you know, the one that you were really trying to get into the lineup more than anyone else. And if it's somebody that we've already talked about, then your next guy down.
Yeah, it was, I think it was, well, it was kind of between Jaylen Brown and Kyrie Irving. I was having a really hard time deciding whether or not Kyrie Irving should be in the starting five for the guards. He's 28 points a game and six assists, and he's only committing 2.4 turnovers. And he's on 50-40. He's 52-42-95 right now on his shooting splits. He's having an incredible year. I mean, he's only played 14 games, but that's not enough for me to really knock him. And it was really hard for me to like leave him out of the starting five. Like I think he could go over Trae Young or Bradley Beal. Like I said, these guys are there's so many good guards in the East.
With Kyrie, like when it comes to actually predicting how this turns out, I have no idea. I don't know if he's lost fans or I don't think he's gained fans, I guess, this season. But it's hard to say, like, you know, will the sabbatical and all the heat that he took for that, will that ultimately affect, you know, his fan voting, which is a huge component when it comes to the starters, at least? How does that affect his standing with the players around the league, the coaches around the league? Like, I can't imagine that helped. I think it's just going to be a question of did it hurt him enough that it could ultimately, you know, has he been cast as this guy who kind of just ditched his team for 3 weeks? Is that enough to ultimately maybe even keep him off the roster altogether?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I think he'll end up on the roster. If he doesn't, then I'm not sure who you replace him with. Like right now, I'm just having a really hard time with the East in general. Like I have 13 guys right now. I know we're supposed to have 12. I don't know who to kick off my team.
So we will settle that in the next half hour.
Will we? Yeah. I'm not sure. Okay, I think he deserves it.
Read me your full 7-man bench, or I guess your 8-man bench for the Eastern Conference.
Okay. 8-man bench is Jaylen Brown, James Harden, Malcolm Brogdon, Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, Chris Middleton, Domantas Sabonis, and Bam Adebayo.
Okay. And so who are you debating for like the last couple spots?
It's tough to say if like, so I'm kind of having a hard time between like Middleton and Tatum. Should they both be in? Same with like Sabonis and Adebayo. Should they both be in? I think Middleton, just based on like low volume, probably is the one who gets kicked off. But I think you could also make the case for Malcolm Brogdon. You could probably make the case for Kyrie Irving. Yeah. I'm having a really hard time because they could all be kicked off for like different reasons, essentially.
So we have a lot of overlap. I kind of made a list of my guys who are next up. I did not have Brogdon or Sabonis on my team. Wouldn't have an issue with either of them. I think I would go Sabonis over Brogdon, but that was really close. I went Middleton. It was kind of down to those three. I did end up sneaking Kyrie on there. So I'll just read mine quick. I have Kyrie, Brad Beal, Chris Middleton, Trae Young, Bam Adebayo, Jason Tatum. And I'm frankly taken aback that you did not include the NBA's number four leader in VORP, Nikola Vucevic, as my final reserve.
So that was a really tough call because I was debating between him and Bam, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that's a legitimate discussion.
Well, and the teams are basically identical, too. I mean, it's not like the Heat are 10 games better than Orlando.
Teams are practically identical. They're putting up pretty similar stats, and Vucevic may have the advantage depending on how you feel about like threes and maybe like a lack of defense, kind of how those balance out. But that he was a really tough omission, and like he could be in over Bam. I just think that's I just couldn't do it. I don't know.
I considered putting Kevin Durant at guard, kicking off Jaylen Brown, and putting Vucevic at my other forward. I honestly did. I really thought I knew I wouldn't be able to get away with it, but he's been that good. Like, he obviously it hasn't resulted in team success. They've had a ton of injuries. They're now without Aaron Gordon for probably a month. Like, it's just been getting worse and worse. But I mean, he's been absolutely incredible, having a career year. So I guess I can't say he's a lock, because nobody that plays for the Orlando Magic is ever an all-star lock. But to me, he was the first guy I wrote down when it came to the reserves. For the most part, a lot of overlap, like we said. My other guys who didn't quite make it in the East. So that list is Ben Simmons, Zach LaVine, Malcolm Brogdon, Julius Randle, Domantas Sabonis, Jeremy Grant, Gordon Hayward, Drew Holiday, Miles Turner, and Clint Capella. Is there anyone else that I forgot who, I wouldn't say any of those guys I feel like they should be on the team, but just guys who you could, somebody out there could make a case for.
You had everyone on my close list, essentially. Okay. I wanted to find a way to get Julius Randle in there. I just couldn't. I think he has a case, but I just don't know. And
with Randle, it was like, okay, I want to get him on, but then if I get him on, how do I justify putting Julius Randle in, but not Jeremy Grant? And then I was like, well, Gordon Hayward is on, I think Gordon Hayward maybe has been better than all those guys. And he's, playing in Charlotte where nobody really is watching anything but LaMelo Ball. I just felt like it had to be all or nothing. And obviously I wasn't going to get all three of those guys on there.
Right. Like, these are guys who we need the next 15 to 20 games, until the All-Star break, to really tell whether or not they deserve to be in. Like, there are definitely going to be snubs. Yeah. Based on how they're playing. And Vucevic is going to be definitely a snub, but I don't know if we'll look back in 3 years and say, oh man, Ben Simmons really deserved an all-star spot, or, Julius Randle really deserved that all-star spot. It's tough to say.
I think Julius Randle will say that. I could see this being something that he's still discussing 5 to 10 years down the road. I don't know. I mean, one of those three guys probably gets in. Like, every year there's one or two injury replacements. This year especially, who knows? I mean, there might be several players who just say, I'm good. I'm taking the week off. We'll see you next week. I would bet one of those guys gets in. It's just going to be hard to choose who. And I think Vooch will get in too. I feel like the numbers are good enough that, and it's not like Orlando, obviously they're not a good team, but it's not like they're demonstrably worse than, Miami, like we said, Atlanta. Everybody in the East is kind of in this just giant pack right now. So even though Orlando's not good, it doesn't feel like they're just, bottom of the barrel right now, even though record wise that's, close to where they are.
Yeah, it's the East is, you're right, very jumbled. I mean, so is the West to some extent. Like, there are just so many teams that are within 3 to 4 wins of each other. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to be I'm trying to, debate should I put Trae Young in over Malcolm Brogdon? It's there's only a one win difference between these teams. Not in a different season where you could be the Pacers have 20 more wins. It's not really it's hard to make that case unless it's very drastic this year.
Right. And All-Star voting has already opened. So it's not like we're going to get a ton more separation between these. Normally we'd have a little bit of a bigger sample before all this starts up, but there's a pretty good chance that the standings are still pretty jumbled when the teams are actually announced.
The RotoWire NBA podcast is brought to you by BetMGM. Sports bettors know that magic happens when you turn a hunch into action and apply the right amount of expertise. That is why BetMGM has teamed up with RotoWire to offer new BetMGM customers a free 6-month RotoWire subscription when you placed your first bet. Register on the BetMGM app or website and use promo code ROTO, that's ROTO, R-O-T-O, to claim your free subscription. Once you make your first sports wager, you'll receive a season's length of RotoWire's unmatched sports insights. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks by signing up and placing your first bet today. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Indiana, New Jersey, Nevada, Tennessee, and West Virginia only. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado and Nevada, and 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey and West Virginia. In Tennessee, call or text the Red Line at 800-889-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada.
I think I found myself favoring subconsciously the players who I think would get in more. Like, yeah. You know, like you said, Trae Young versus Brogdon. Like, to me, that's like, oh, it's just Trae Young because he's a star. And Malcolm Brogdon, I don't think, is quite on that level nationally, certainly. So I kind of defaulted to those guys. Like even Jason Tatum, I kind of had to think twice about just because he's only played, 14 games. Right. Has only been fully healthy for a handful of those. Like, to me, it wouldn't be crazy to leave him off just because of the smaller sample.
I agree. And like, some of this is tough too, because there are so many guys putting up numbers that like the Trae Young versus Brogdon thing, especially. Like, Trae Young obviously has way more volume to his numbers, right? He's closer to 30 points a game. He's closer to 10 assists, but Brogdon's only at 2 turnovers a game, like 7 assists, 2 turnovers, 23 points on 45, 40, 90 shooting. Like, it's hard to look at that and say like, that's definitely worse than Trae Young. So it's, I don't know.
Mm. So did you have anyone else on your list of potential options? I know you said I covered most of yours.
I think you had everyone. I mean, I don't know if you said Westbrook. I had him on there, but he was like,
I did not say cross-offs. Westbrook. He's a cross off.
Yeah. I put him on there. He was like, the Russell Westbrook, like memorial, like, yeah. I just typed him in and then crossed him off without really thinking about it.
I feel like if he doesn't get chosen, or when he doesn't get chosen, like, maybe he'll just enter the 3-point contest. Maybe he enters the dunk contest. Like, he will have to find a way to get there. Like, it's been, when's the last time he hasn't been an All-Star? I mean, I without looking, I would guess, I don't think there was ever a year where he was hurt early on and would have missed it. I mean, it's probably been a full decade, right?
2013-14, you didn't make it. Played 46 really? Games. Yeah. He averaged 22-7-6.
Where did he miss that time, if you have it up?
I don't have it up. Okay. I was looking at how many dunks he had when you said dunks, because I was trying to see.
He only has one this season, right? I feel like I read that somewhere.
I believe that.
I want to say Fred Katz had that.
He does have one dunk this year. Ooh. Yeah. In 11
Not
games.
No. Not a good sign. Any other thoughts on the East?
Not that I have right now.
Okay. Let's move to the West. I think you and I both agreed that the East was much harder, and traditionally that has not been the case with the amount of elite talent over the last decade or so in the West has been, I feel like there's usually a team of like 5 players that didn't make it from the West who you would say like all 5 of these guys would have been no-brainers in the East. And I don't feel like that's the case at all. I think the talent is actually distributed pretty evenly right now. I mean, I think the, if you're making like a top 5 players in each conference, I think the like LeBron, Kawhi, Steph, Davis, Jokic, or whoever it is in the West is probably a little bit better than what you could put together in the East. But, when Kevin Durant and James Harden are going from West to East, that certainly helps. I'll kick it to you again. Give me your 5 starters in the Western Conference.
5 starters are Luka Doncic, Damian Lillard, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Jokic.
Okay, we go 4 for 5. I had Luka at first. That was kind of one of those, like I was talking about with Trae Young, where it was like, oh, he's Luka Doncic. I'm just going to pencil him in. I swapped him out and went with Curry.
Okay. I almost swapped him out and went with Paul George.
It's funny you say that. I initially had Paul George and ended up kind of kicking him out. Yeah, I mean, with Paul George, like the efficiency is so good. Just like the counting stats for me weren't quite there. But I mean, honestly, any of those 3 would be fine for that last guard spot for me.
I think so. Yeah, I had a tough time. I wanted one of Curry or Lillard in there, and I think Lillard has better numbers.
Yep.
They're extremely comparable, but and then Doncic versus George, that was like really tough for me. I think I flip-flopped those a few times just because, again, it's the volume versus efficiency thing. Doncic objectively just like hasn't been that efficient this year. But it's hard to argue with like the 9 assists, 9 rebounds a game. Their defensive numbers are actually like the same, even though I think Paul George is obviously a better defender.
Yeah.
And so like if I had to lean one way, I'm just going with the volume, but it was not an easy choice.
No, I feel like Doncic had so much momentum coming into the year that it's kind of been his spot to lose. And Like you said, the counting stats are so good that it's not like it feels like he's having a bad year, but at the same time, it kind of feels like he's having a bad year. He's under 30% from 3. That was kind of the kicker for me, where it's like, okay, do I want the guy who's the best shooter ever, shooting 41% on a huge volume, or the guy who's taking a ton and hitting him at 29%? Like, you know, obviously Doncic has the counting stats, like we said, but I think that that gap in efficiency is big enough. You know, if Doncic was shooting 35% from three, I think that would have been enough for me to put him in over Curry. But that is a massive, massive gap. And again, I mean, Dallas has not been a very good team. They've taken a lot of tough losses recently. So, you know, obviously the Warriors aren't great either, but they've at least stabilized to the point where they're not getting blown out every night, where that's kind of looked like where it was going the first week of the year. You know, there's not really much of a gap in team quality. So to me, there's not a lot of ground where Doncic can make up in that regard. Curry versus Lillard is also pretty interesting. I sided with Lillard in that one, as did you. Lillard's up about 3 points in PER. He's up about 0.7 in win shares. He's way up in win shares per 48. He leads him in VORP. He leads Curry in true shooting, even, which almost never happens. So even though Curry's been great, I think Lillard has been a little bit better. He's kind of beaten Curry at his own game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and Lillard and Curry have had like the same amount of big games. Like sometimes when I look at the All-Star stuff, I'll take, you know, who's had a game with a game score of at least 25, which is basically like a big game. And Lillard has had 6 of those and Curry has had 5 of those. So that wasn't like a huge deciding factor for me either. I think Lillard's just been slightly better. And like you mentioned it, it's the gap's not that big. And within 10 games, Curry could get hot and make that leap over Lillard.
So Jokic is the no-brainer of all no-brainers here. He leads the league in VORP at 2.3 right now. Number two is Doncic at 1.8. Like a 0.5 gap probably doesn't sound like all that much, but that is a very, very large gap between the number one and the number two guy. Like, he has been the best player in the NBA so far. So for me, that was an obvious no-brainer. I mean, LeBron and Kawhi, I think, are probably going to be unanimous picks as well. Was there anyone else, backcourt or frontcourt, who you considered for a starting spot?
No, there wasn't.
Hey, NBA fans, Owner's Box is here to reinvent the way you play fantasy sports this season. Owner's Box is not DFS. They're the first ever weekly fantasy sports platform to combine the best elements of daily and season-long fantasy. Owner's Box is a head-to-head elimination-style format that keeps players engaged through live snake drafts and a new layer of strategy that allows you to become the ultimate fantasy GM. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. On Owner's Box, users can brand themselves and engage socially on the platform in multiple different ways, add friends, create custom leagues, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Users are able to draft a new team every single day and participate in different types of contests to keep the fantasy experience fresh and fun so you're never out of the game. To tip off the NBA season, if you sign up free now, Owner's Box will match your first deposit up to $500. Think you got what it takes to be a weekly fantasy GM? Visit ownersbox.com/rotowire to claim your bonus and make a name for yourself today.
The only other guy who came to mind, and this was another one of those like, oh, I'll just write him down because he's him, was Anthony Davis. But, you know, Davis versus Jokic is not a competition this year, and I'm not going to put him in over LeBron or Kawhi. So ultimately that ended up being a pretty easy call, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about Davis, but then I just like, I kind of knew that, like, he's not playing well. Like, he's playing fine, but he's definitely like taking a step back, or at least just not trying as hard.
Yeah, he had one rebound last night.
I know, like, a lot of times you'll watch a Lakers game and you just kind of forget he's out there, and or he can just be shut down easily, which is kind of weird to say, but I don't think that's him like getting worse. I think that's just him, you know, kind of a lack of effort since the Lakers won the title so recently. Yeah. But he still gets knocked for that. You know, you still get knocked for not putting in 100% effort.
He just gets pushed around too easily. Like, I don't want to accuse him of not trying or anything, but, you know, I think a game like last night where you have someone like Clint Capella who's going to go for every single rebound, balls to the wall. I mean, he had like 16 boards in that game. Like, Anthony Davis, I think, likes to get by on his skill and athleticism, and like 95% of the time that works really well. You can in fact just win a title doing that. But when you go up against like the effort gap sometimes, I think, is where guys can make up ground on him. And if you kind of get into his head early and push him around, like, I think when he's in the zone, like, there were times in the bubble where it was like, oh my God, like, this, he's getting every rebound. He's just going to dunk everything on the offensive end. But if he's not in that mindset, like, he can get pushed around by a lot of the more, like, bouncy physical centers in the league.
Yeah, I think that's the main criticism of Davis, and it has been for a while, right, is he just, like, doesn't use – he just doesn't like to be physical when he plays.
Yeah.
He plays more like a small forward in terms of, right, like, maybe not even that. I mean, it's hard to explain. Like, he doesn't – he's not always looking to draw contact. He's not always looking for hard box outs. He doesn't like to post up and drive. He likes to post up and fade, which is insane to me for someone, like, with his – like bulk and athleticism. So, you know, I don't know.
I think he, in his mind, he's Paul George. Like, they have like the same game, weirdly.
I love that comparison. I think he's
unbelievably smooth for a guy that size. Like, gotta give him his credit. And I mean, it works really well. He's still shooting a great percentage for a guy who takes an insane amount of difficult shots. But yeah, and what's frustrating is, like, we've seen him do it. You know, like, it's not like he just doesn't have the bulk, or, you know, has never been physical. Like, when he wants to do it, he can exert his will and be the best player in the NBA. But it almost seems like he has to like solely focus on being physical, or he won't be physical at all.
Yeah, it is a little LeBron-esque in terms of, like, you know, flipping the switch, and maybe LeBron is kind of in his ear, especially now, and being like, you know, listen, we just won the title. You can start taking it easy. Like, we're fine.
Right.
And yeah.
I don't know. It's easy for us to say, but in my position, it's like, look, if you're going to be out there playing 37 minutes in an NBA game, like, why not try? You know, like, you just if you're taking the night off to rest, so be it. Take the night off. But if you're going to be out there and you're going to play more than your normal amount of minutes, like, why not put in the effort? I don't know. I'll never understand that.
I don't know.
Okay, so give me your full bench in the Western Conference.
Full bench is Steph Curry, Paul George, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Davis, Christian Wood, Rudy Gobert, and believe it or not, DeMar DeRozan.
I had DeRozan on my list. I thought about it. I ended up keeping him off. I don't feel as good about it now, especially since I'm sure you're going to lay out a good case for it. So I do not have SGA. I didn't really consider him. Maybe because it feels like a slightly disappointing season from him, which is really not fair at all. But I think my expectations were a little bit higher. He's been very good to me. He hasn't been great. But filling those last couple spots in the West really has not been easy at all. I mean, I had Davis and Doncic, Gobert and Paul George as my first four reserves. Those were all locks to me. You know, we talked about, you know, PG and Doncic potentially being starters. I think in a normal year, Gobert would be the starter at center. I mean, I think Gobert over Davis, maybe even at this point. But obviously Jokic is going to have that spot. I went with those four. Christian Wood as well. And then my final two guard spots went to Donovan Mitchell and Chris Paul.
Interesting. I crossed off Chris Paul pretty early. I think I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. It's worse than last year. And I think he was kind of on the fringes last year. Like, I think he got it only because the Thunder were playing so far above expectations that he was kind of just handed the all-star appearance. Not that he had a bad season, but I don't think he's playing any better this year. And he's playing worse pretty much across the board, except, I mean, his assists are back up, which is nice, but I just couldn't do it this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of a legacy play for sure. No debate about it. I mean, for me, the assist bouncing back up was big. He's still been good on defense. Not really shooting the ball all that well, though. I mean, he's had, I think, a career worst pace, or at least his worst since his rookie year from three. So that, you know, hopefully will turn around at some point. But no, you're right. I mean, I didn't feel great about this one. Like, the Suns not being a super good team right now, you know, he doesn't have that same argument that he did last year in OKC. Like, I think you're totally right that he maybe wasn't quite as good as people made him out to be last year, but that team was so surprising that I don't think I heard one person say he didn't deserve to be an all-star, you know? But I guess to be like that even though the Suns have kind of underachieved, like, there's so much talent that I just felt like a Sun had to be on this team, and it certainly wasn't going to be Devin Booker. It wasn't going to be DeAndre Ayton. So I went with Chris Paul, but I'm telling you, when I say I considered DeMar DeRozan, I very heavily considered it.
I ended up at one point putting, like, Basketball Reference as the player comparison thing.
Yeah.
And at one point I did like a four player comparison with Donovan Mitchell, SGA, DeMar DeRozan, and Brandon Ingram, and was just like staring at the numbers. And I ended up with SGA and DeRozan. I I was really interested in Donovan Mitchell versus Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I can't say that Donovan Mitchell's having a better year than SGA right now. Like, I think if you flip those two, like, I think if you had SGA on the Utah Jazz being, like, the number one guy next to Rudy Gobert, that they would probably have, like, the same record.
I mean, numbers-wise, you're totally right. I mean, I think SGA has probably been the better player if you're looking at, like, a blind resume. But there's, I don't know, there's something about Mitchell where I feel like he's always played above the numbers to some degree. And you know, the efficiency hasn't been spectacular this year. But this is the one instance where I went team success over the individual. And normally I would default to the individual, but 6.5 game difference, you know, Utah's been the talk of the league, obviously, over the last few weeks. They're 15-5. It just feels like they would get two all-stars in this situation. So maybe this one was more of a, a hedge toward like what I think will actually happen versus what I want to happen. I think SGA and DeRozan over Mitchell and Paul is by no means egregious. But based on how things tend to go, like I would expect that it would end up being Mitchell and Paul based on the names.
I think so too. Yeah. And I could also probably kick Gobert off and go with Mitchell, but I'd feel weird starting only one center or having only one center on my team.
The Jazz need at least one.
Yeah, they do. As far as DeRozan goes, I just like 6.6 assists to 1.7 turnovers. If he was anyone else, people would be talking about him like he's an elite passer. Yeah. And the 20 points a game on 14 shots is obviously incredible. He's back to shooting threes, not a ton, but he's making them efficiently. He's 49% from the field. He's still getting to the free throw line, doing that efficiently. His offensive rating is 124, which is almost the highest of maybe anybody on this list. I didn't like double check, but it was really hard for me to like, again, leave him off or say that he's having a worse year than someone like Donovan Mitchell. Mm-hmm. So I don't put him on.
Okay. I'm making a last second amendment. I'm kicking off Chris Paul. I'm putting on Donovan Mitchell or not Donovan Mitchell. Sorry. DeMar DeRozan.
Okay.
You've convinced me. Thank you. Offensive rating stat.
That was the one.
No, he's been great. He has been. He's been awesome. I think he's kind of a forgotten man at this point. Obviously, I think people still think of him as like the old Raptors shooting guard, not the current Spurs shooting guard.
Yeah.
And so much of the attention with the Spurs has turned to, you know, Keldon Johnson, DeJounte Murray, the future. Whereas, you know, it's still DeRozan and Aldridge holding that team together. I'll give you first dibs now to read me your honorable mentions for the Western Conference.
Sure. Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Chris Paul, Zion, Brandon Ingram, and that's it.
Okay. I have all those guys, and I'll throw on a few more names. And again, these are just guys who either normally would have a case or somebody would make the case for them. John Morant only played 7 games. I think there's still a chance he gets there if he plays enough. Obviously, in the 7 games that he's played, he's been awesome. So would be deserving. Devin Booker, I think a guy that most of us would have just penciled in before the season, just hasn't been all that good. Although when I looked at the numbers, they weren't as bad as I thought. Like his numbers are still very, very strong. The problem is, you know, with Chris Paul arriving, he's just kind of taken on a different role. So it's been a pretty dramatic drop in assists, but he's averaging over a steal a game for the first time in his career. The 3-point shooting is actually up compared to the last couple of years. He's at 47% from the field. The big thing with Booker is he's getting to the line 2 fewer times per game, and he's shooting 9 percentage points worse at the line compared to last year. So, I mean, he's leaving a good like 3 to 4 points on the board, you know, compared to last season.
Yeah, Booker, kind of a weird step back, although I think maybe we should have seen a more dramatic, like I think we should have seen this coming for Booker, because when Chris Paul is on a team, he just kind of like he's just the ball comes to him and stays there, and right. He's the one who dishes out all the assists and people swing the ball back to him and you reset the offense, and so Booker losing a ton of assists, losing, you know, shots, I think it makes sense. I wish he'd be more aggressive, but they're relatively successful right now.
Right.
I still think, you know, they're better than the 11-8 that they are. But he just compared to last year, it's hard to make the case for him.
He's a very good passer, but let's not be confused. Like, you still want the ball in Chris Paul's hands. Like, I think part of the reason that Devin Booker averaged 6.8 and 6.5 assists over the previous two seasons was that the Suns did not employ an actual point guard. Like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, they had no point guards. You know, basically just like a third stringer on the bench or Devin Booker handling the ball. So that was kind of, he was kind of shoehorned into that role in the first place, and it was fine. But I think those assist numbers were like a little bit artificially inflated over the last 2 years just because he was kind of playing out of position.
Well, and it's crazy too from someone who has scored 70 points in a game before that we have seen like no big games out of him this year. Like at all. Like his high right now in points is 33. His high in assists is 8. Quarter of the way through the season, like that should be like, you know, 40 for points.
Right.
So yeah, he's not, the volume is way down for him.
So Ja Morant, Devin Booker. I also had De'Aaron Fox, who's played very well lately. Mike Conley, like you said, SGA. I threw DeAndre Ayton on there. Doesn't really have a realistic shot, but you know, the rebounding numbers, I guess, have been good. He's been fine. DeRozan, Zion. I put Brandon Ingram on the list as well. I don't think he has much of a shot either. And then the two guys who, due to injury, really don't have much of an opportunity. One, Karl-Anthony Towns. He's only played, I think, 5 games so far. Has looked great in those games and is out indefinitely still with COVID-19. And then a guy who I think, you know, the timing of his injury is just really bad because I think he was finally going to get his first All-Star appearance in the West. And that was CJ McCollum.
McCollum was looking incredible. Like he was taking so much off of Lillard's plate. Like I think he was doing good things for Portland. You know, he was shooting 11 threes a game and hitting them at 44%. Like that was a huge jump up for him. And he's kind of in that like DeRozan territory where it's like, again, you know, McCollum passes the ball, but it's 5 assists to 1 turnover. And for someone who shoots, like for someone who shoots 20 times a game, and hands out 5 assists, only 1 turnover is insane. And it's probably never happened before. So I think he would have certainly had a case.
Yeah, I think he and Lillard would have made it. It's not like that was going to be a one or the other situation by any means, but he would have been firmly in that discussion, you know, with the Donovan Mitchell versus Chris Paul versus SGA versus DeRozan. I think he would have been at the forefront of that. I mean, I would say he's, you know, I guess we'd have to see because he was so efficient to begin the year. I mean, he was shooting probably way over his head from three, you know, 44% compared to 37% or 38% the last couple of years. So he was probably due for a little bit of regression. But I think like between those five, where they stood before McCollum's injury, I think he would have been my first pick of that group.
Yeah, it would have been pretty easy to put him over DeRozan, definitely.
Yeah, and that's saying a lot.
It kind of is, actually.
It is.
And same over Mitchell. I think I probably would have had him over Donovan Mitchell as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So now that we're starting to talk about this, I kind of hope there is an All-Star game. You know, my All-Star game juices are kind of flowing again. What are your expectations currently for how this thing is going to turn out? Because as of now, usually we don't get this far in the process and then have it canceled. You know, like Woj has written multiple stories on this. The league is, quote unquote, moving forth with it. Like it's in the works right now. How do you think this turns out? Is it going to be a disaster? Is it going to be something that we look back on and say, we didn't think this would be fun, but you know, I'm glad there was an All-Star game. Like, how do you see it playing out?
I think the energy will be relatively low in terms of like the game itself, because these guys aren't getting much time off for the break itself. And they haven't had much time off during the season because it's so condensed. Mm-hmm. And again, we might like, who knows who's even going to go and what sort of incentives is the NBA going to incentivize players to go that get voted in? Are they going to incentivize them from not coming? Like, are you going to get punished for not coming to the All-Star game during a pandemic where it could like affect your team's record? If you like step outside in Atlanta and like try to go get something to eat, are you just going to be trapped in your hotel room? I don't know what's going to happen there. And I don't, you know, I'm optimistic, like cautiously optimistic, because I love the All-Star game and I love All-Star weekend and the dunk contest and everything like that, assuming they're going to do it. But I would not be surprised if it's kind of just like a low energy, mm-hmm. like sort of flop, as much of as an All-Star game can be a flop.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I think the game, I mean, I think most people would say, well, the game itself is pretty low energy anyway. And traditionally that has been the case, you know, with, especially from like 2010 to 2018 range. Like those were some pretty rough All-Star games. Even I would admit that. But you know, with either no or very limited fans, you know, players who are probably much more disinterested than they would normally be, I think there is a pretty decent risk of this one just being a very forgettable, like, let's just never talk about this again type of situation. I do wonder, like, I don't, maybe you have, I haven't seen any players asked about this yet. You know, like, has anyone said, like, hey, LeBron, how do you feel about an All-Star game happening? Because, you know, as of a few weeks ago, I think most players were expecting to get this time off to spend with their families.
I've not seen anything about that. And you would think that, like, he's someone to ask, or basically just anyone who's definitely going to be an All-Star.
Yeah, DeRozan.
Exactly. Yeah, just like anything, like, are you going if this happens?
Right.
Like, even that, I don't feel like is too aggressive of a question.
No, not at all. I mean, people were asking, are you going to go to the NBA bubble? This is much, much less drastic than that. I don't know. I do wonder if maybe the players have been told, hey, the party line is, we're going with this. It's going to save us some money long term. I mean, obviously they're going to pitch this as a kind of a charity thing, and that's all well and good. And you know, HBCUs and other organizations that the league sponsors, I'm sure, will benefit from this. So that's fine. But at the end of the day, this is a cash grab by the league. I mean, I don't know how the All-Star game contracts work. I assume that's a pretty big night for TNT. So, you know, trying to salvage that is probably a pretty big motivation here, I would imagine.
Yeah, I can't see any other reason for it other than the, like, marketing and profit aspect of it.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I think players, much like they did with the NBA bubble, you know, once it was clear what was actually at stake, and same goes for starting this season when the NBA did just before Christmas, you know, once the financials become clear, guys tend to fall in line, you know, pretty quickly. So my guess is that's what we'll see here. But yeah, it's going to be weird. And, you know, to try, like, I guess if we're going to do the All-Star game, you know, now there's talk of there being a full on, you know, skills competition, 3-point shootout, dunk contest. Like, we might as well. If you're going to do the game, I don't have a problem with adding that.
I guess. I mean, it adds more people that have to show up.
True.
But at the same time, like, most of the people, like, a lot of the skills competition people will be All-Stars. It's just the 3-point and the dunk contest people that, you know, probably wouldn't have been there anyway. You know, we'll probably get some, like, random, you know, like, random guys essentially in the dunk contest. You know, who knows?
Is there anyone off the top of your head that you really want to see in either of those, dunk or 3-point? Or skills, I guess.
I feel like I'm totally blanking on dunk contest. Like, I mean, Zion,
yes.
Would love to see him.
I don't think that's happening. I think
that
Zion,
would be,
Zion and Morant need to be in it.
Yes.
Maybe that this isn't be, the one.
That would be enough, like, for everyone to tune in.
Yes, that would save All-Star Weekend.
It actually would, provided Zion can still actually jump, he was in high school.
Right.
Although he's had a couple. He put that poster on, I forgot who, on the Kings, which is maybe one of his most memorable dunk of his career so far.
I think it was easily. And I, too, cannot remember who it was on. But that was, like, we had just talked about, like, a week or two before that, like, he doesn't really dunk in the NBA. And then he goes and does that. Yeah, I kind of want to see Kawhi Leonard in the dunk contest. Just, like, that spectacle. I think he would just, like, calmly walk up to the hoop and perform a two-handed slam dunk and then just walk away.
Kawhi Leonard is absolutely loves the, you know, Statue of Liberty dunk. He's a huge fan of it.
It would be hilarious if he just like approached it like a real game, like ran up full speed and just did a quick one-hander and ran back.
Yeah, maybe like a crossover or like a hezzy move first.
He's like looking for the foul. there's not anyone else that comes to mind. I mean, like from what I've seen from James Wiseman athletically, I don't know what he has in his dunk package as far as like dexterity and, you know, being able to contort himself in the air, you know, that lends well to dunk contests. But just in terms of like pure leaping, I think he could do something.
Did Derek Jones Jr. do it one year?
I think he did it. He definitely has done it. I want to say he might have done it last year even. I think he did do it last year.
Okay. I can never remember.
I mean,
he's
a perennial. I feel like the league can call him up at any point and he's happy to do it.
Yeah.
All right, I want to finish out with this. We talked about this a few, maybe close to a month back, now. And you know, you kind of brought up the notion that this season and maybe not last season is the one that we'll look back on as, you know, the quote unquote asterisk season in the NBA. What I'm curious about is, do you still feel that way? And if not, what has changed?
I still feel that way. The amount of postponements, the amount of guys sitting out weeks with COVID-19, the, like, everyone wants to analyze teams, but you can't without, like, putting three caveats on it first for most situations. Like, hey, how's Dallas doing? Well, they're missing half their team for 2 weeks. Or, you know, like, and then the guys come back and they play bad, so all the numbers are screwed up. I think it's really tough to evaluate a lot of different teams. I think it'll end up being, I think it'll mostly be normal, but the thing is, I don't know what is going to happen with the playoffs. And that's what worries me still, is like, people are going to miss time during the regular season. That happens, right? Every team will theoretically get hit equally with this COVID stuff. But what happens when it's first round of the playoffs and half of the Lakers catch COVID, or any other scenario that's basically like that, and then they get bounced? What happens then? And again, like, I've heard Zach Lowe or Brian Windhorst or whoever say, like, the NBA has not ruled out doing a bubble for the playoffs again, but it sounds like the players are like, that's an absolute last resort. Like, nobody ever wants to do that again. So that's my main concern.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on the numbers, especially. It's been one thing to try to evaluate these teams by watching them, but then when you look at the numbers, it's just almost impossible, because, you know, like, aggregate, you know, defensive rating or something like that, it's like, well, they, you know, the Mavs are a great example. They were missing basically four of their top six players for more than 2 weeks. So how do you account for a sample that's, like, you know, over a third of their total games played? I don't know if that's ever going to even out. You know, I hope we get to a point where, much like in the bubble, the NBA would proudly announce every week, we've had no more positive tests. I don't know that we're going to get there. It seemed like we were kind of moving in the right direction over these last couple of weeks. And then, you know, there's a game canceled at the last second last night. You know, Towns, like we've said, is still dealing with COVID. So we're by no means out of the woods. It does seem like the NBA buckling down on the protocols has helped to some degree. Although I don't know how you're ever going to account for, like, Tyler Hero, you know, was in protocols for a short period of time over the weekend, didn't end up missing any time, but I think it was just like somebody that had stayed with him had registered a positive test, and he ended up being okay. But, you know, that's just the risk you're going to run throughout the entire year when these guys aren't in a bubble. And I really hope that we don't have to go to a bubble for the playoffs. Like, even though there's no fans, you know, one, hopefully there will be some fans in some arenas in the playoffs, although that's looking like bleaker and bleaker by the day. The bubble was fine. As kind of a one-time novelty type of thing, like, to have to go back into that again and, you know, kind of compare and contrast it to last year, like, it would, in a lot of ways, suck the momentum out of the season for me.
I think it would. Yeah. And I don't know what they're going to do in terms of, like, trying to make guys take it as seriously as possible if there's not a bubble. At the same time, I feel like almost half the league has probably had COVID at this point. Like, right, we get those updates every week, and we've been getting them to some extent since the pandemic started. And, you know, sometimes it's like 15 new players, one new player. Other times it's like 20 new players, or guys return, like, a bunch of guys return to camp with it. And we might reach a point where, like, 75% of the league has had it and it's not as big of an issue. But that's obviously, like, not ideal.
Yeah. And even if that is the case, I think deep down the league probably knows that. And they're like, look, we're not really worried about our players necessarily. You know, obviously they are, but, like, I think deep down they would admit, like, our biggest fear is not players catching COVID and getting sick. It's the optics of the entire situation, you know, where the league just can't be like, hey, we have herd immunity here in our league, so we're just going to continue on. You know, you guys deal with all the restrictions and wearing masks and whatnot, but we're good. Like, I don't think they can really do that. They're just not in a position PR wise where, even if that was the case and all the players had it and all the staff had it, I think there's like too much public pressure for them to, I guess, be kind of like a role model, you know, organization, league, you know, for everyone else.
I think so. And I mean, maybe for the playoffs, they'll just do a situation where they are willing to postpone games a ton. Yeah. Like, they'll make this huge window for the playoffs. Like, the playoffs could last, like, 3.5, 4 months.
Years.
Theoretically. Yeah. It could be next year, and we'd be like, the finals, they're finally here.
Right.
I could see them just being really lenient with that. But who knows? That would also suck the momentum out of everything, too.
Well, I mean, one of the advantages that the league has is you are playing series. You know, so if you're, you know, if you kind of have to, like, lock it down, you know, you're not worried about, like, right now, there's, like, this cascading effect where, okay, so a Pistons player tests positive in Memphis on Tuesday, but they're going to fly to Indiana on Wednesday, and, oh, they were actually just in Milwaukee the night before. So there's kind of this, you have to just do this kind of crazy web of, like, you know, where did they actually contract it? Who had they talked to? Who had they been near? With a series, like, at least it would be more self-contained, and theoretically it'd be easier if, you know, if you have to take a couple days off, you know, you're not necessarily worried about, like, wrecking the rest of the schedule. Although if every other series is progressing, you know, as scheduled and one is lagging behind, then you might have these kind of crazy swings in days off between series.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant, where it could be like there could be like a week off between when one series finishes and the other one starts. And we had a little bit of that in the bubble, just in terms of like some longer layoffs. But
I mean, in a normal season, that happens. If, you know, one team sweeps, one team goes to seven, you're going to get that. It's like, to me, that's not a huge deal. But I mean, if it's a situation where Kevin Durant and James Harden both have COVID and the Nets are up two games against the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Nets have enough players to play the game three. Does the league step in and say, no, this isn't fair? Like, that's, I think that's where, hopefully it doesn't come to that, but if it does, that's where the league is going to have some serious questions.
100%. And I, you know, they're going to have to come up with a plan sooner than later. I know they probably want to wait as long as possible to kind of get a feel of how things go. But sooner or later, I mean, we're going to have to understand how the playoffs are going to work.
Well, we don't even have the second half of the regular season scheduled yet. Like, the schedule, like, in our back end admin, you know, when you look ahead, it just cuts off after like March 4th. So I don't know what's happening after that.
Neither do I.
All right, man. We'll wrap this one up here. Fun time chatting about the All-Star stuff. We'll check back in on this, you know, as votes start to come in and the picture starts to clear up a little more. I'll be back with James later this week. We will have Ben Zweiman from DraftKings at some point in the next week or so. So keep an eye out for that. And then you will be back on Friday, as usual, with Shannon and Ken.